Welcome to IKP's Digital Film Podcast, where we literally discuss everything and anything in the digital film world that tickles our fancy. This could be the latest Blu-ray releases to the latest theater releases. Is 1080p really gone the way of the dodo? 4K OLED coming strong? How prepared should you be? Will that HDMI cable that cost you $300 really make a difference? NAB, CES, MegaCon, Comic-Con, Cedia, Anime Expo. What conventions should we be attending or paying attention to? What televisions are the best? Samsung, Panasonic, Toshiba, Sony? What Blu-ray player is the best buy? Oppo, Sony, Panasonic, Samsung? Who knows? But that's the beautiful journey we're going to take here at IKP's Digital Film Podcast. So kick back, relax, and enjoy our sexy Digital Film Podcast. Yeah. Welcome to IKP's Filmmaking Tour 101. In this tour, we will kind of take a little bit of a journey in education of filmmaking process. Key roles such as directors, cinematographers, producers, cameras, film cameras, how they work, why they work, why a person does this job to this job. Now, this tour, unlike the digital film tour, will contain more of me describing things, less footage, I guess you can say. But every link that I do send you to or talk about will be in the description, as previously before. The agenda here is to give you one cohesive unit of information grabbed by many different people that I've worked with, that I've heard from commentary tracks, pages I've read, down to Wikipedia, down to SpectraCal, through personal experience, so on and so forth. So you don't have to kind of, I will give you the links to go to these things and I'll do half the work for you. And the rest of the work, you'll kind of go off into the wild yourself and attain. Because theory, it can only take you so far, but field work is priceless. So one thing is coming here and listening to me tell you what filmmaking is. And another thing is taking that knowledge and applying it to whatever it is you're doing. So straight off, I'm going to tell you that what I wanted to do here is, instead of telling you what I think filmmaking is or what I think a director is or a cinematographer is, I know what these people are, but it could come off as somewhat biased and one-sided. So what I wanted to do, instead of give you what my opinion or my knowledge of what these people are, is give you a more accurate, I guess by the book, reference of what the roles are of these people. So if you hear me paraphrasing, or you think I'm reading from something you've read before or seen before, you are right. What I did was create a, like I said, a cohesive knowledge-based stuff. So I'm going to read to you things that I've read, and I'll paraphrase people that I've heard, directors, DPs, cinematographers. And then I'll also give you my opinions on what the filmmaking process should be in the way I do things. And hopefully by the end of this, you will have a basic knowledge of filmmaking and take that information, and you can listen to it over and over, watch this over and over, and have that ingrained into your head. And the rest, you can go off and learn yourself by picking up a camera and shoot. All the links that I will say will be in this description below, just as the previous digital film tour, but this is Filmmaking Tour 101. So shall we get started? Okay, let's start with cameras. So let's go back, and most of us won't be shooting on film cameras because, you know, film is too expensive and film cameras are actually no longer made. There are still many people shooting on film, but as the years progress, that is becoming less and less due to film is not very cost effective. It's very expensive. And with digital cameras becoming not only more affordable, but the ability to record images digitally, process them, is much more not only cost effective, but intuitive and pretty much easier to get from point A to point B than the film process. So let's start with a film camera, which is a tool that focuses and measures photons of light and records them as images. With a film camera, what happens is light enters through the lens and pretty much hits the film behind the lens. Now, that film is covered in an emulsion, which contains grains of silver halide crystals. Now, these crystals act pretty much chemically when light hits them, and these crystals change to silver metal when they are sent to be developed. And voila, a photographic image is formed onto the film. Now, a digital camera does not use film, of course. Instead, it has an electronic sensor chip behind the lens. The sensor is pretty much made up of it has an electronic sensor chip behind the lens, and the sensor is pretty much made up of millions of tiny picture elements, or pixels for short. So when light hits, when light enters the camera, it hits the pixels and creates individual electronic charges, you know, ones and zeros and whatnot. These charges are measured and converted into digital data, which represents the image. Cinematography. So let's get into what a cinematographer's job is. Okay, so the cinematographer, or director of photography, or DP for short, helps the director achieve the look of the movie in question. Now, the DP is responsible for knowing what equipment is needed and how it works to capture the scenes that are needed to be captured, such as the, you know, which lenses and what I like to describe cinematographers is painters, but they paint not with brushes but with light. Now, a DP looks at color and composition and all these things in terms of how the movie is being built, so that, you know, the quality of light on the skin, the quality of light through hair, the quality of light through a window or a light bounce off the floor. They're pretty much equating and building this world in terms of ambience energy. Anything that reflects off of objects, and they frame and get a pretty much a sensibility or a sense of the director comes to the DP and says, look, this is what I have in my mind, and I need you to help me create that. And they go off and they choose the appropriate equipment to help the director achieve that look with lighting, framing. They will often operate cameras and so on and so forth. Now, one of the first steps of a production process is to get the directors, actors, cinematographers, and pretty much the entire production crew to work together to bring a script to life. So let's get into directors. So, director's responsibilities. Directors are pretty much responsible for overseeing creative aspects of a film under the overall control of the film producer. Now, together with producers, directors develop a vision for a film. Once this vision is developed, it is pretty much the director's job to carry out the vision and decide how the film should look. Directors pretty much responsible for turning the script into a sequence of shots with the help of an artist or a camera or whatever they choose to start creating storyboards, sequences of shots, especially key shots. They also direct what the tone of a movie should have and what an audience should gain pretty much from the cinematic experience that they're creating. Film directors are also responsible for deciding camera angles, lenses, effects, lighting, and help the cinematographer and set designer. Now, they will often take part in hiring the cast and key crew members. They coordinate the actors' moves, you know, they give them notes. So essentially they direct, you know, some directors are on hand, very like, you know, like, I want this precisely this way, I want this. Some directors give you a general direction and just let you do your job while he does his job. So it varies from director to director. So, but no one thing, usually you are at the mercy of the director. He is captain of the ship. And if you signed on to work with said director, whether you like the way he works or whether you don't, each director works differently. A lot of directors don't like a communal inputs, because at the end of the day, if the movie fails, like with me as a director, I take input from different people, and I try to make everybody happy. But at the end of the day, what I usually tell people when I direct, I don't like it to be a communal experience in terms of how the movie should be made. There are key people that I do have to talk to create my vision, but ultimately, if we start doing a movie as a communal decision-making kind of thing, and then the movie is a failure, or say, you know, someone invested a lot of money to help you make this movie. Guess what? At the end of the day, if the movie is a flop, who are they going to look at? The communal people, which told you to cut that there, told you that they wanted this line in there, told you to do this, told you to do that, and you'd make everybody happy. No, they're going to step aside, and guess what? The director is at fault. He's the guy that fucked this movie up. So that's why I don't like, I like to surround myself with talented people and utilize their talents. But as for the filmmaking process, I know what I want from beginning to end. So you'll come across this in many different situations. You yourself might be a very controlling director, or you might be one of those directors that likes a communal experience, but it varies from director to director. The director also plays a key role in post-production. He or she works with the editor to ensure the emotions of the scene and close-ups, mid-shots, wide shots, long shots to appropriately reflect which character is driving the narrative. Now, the director also advises on the color grading of the final images, whether it's adding warmth or coolness or whatever, to the final composition of the shots to reflect the emotion, subtext of the character or environment. The director also participates and directs the sound mix and musical composition of the film, or helps guide it through that, you know. So he's the captain of the ship. I mean, he's guiding everybody to make sure that, you know, his vision of what he set out to do is produced as closely to what he had in his head. So in subsequent promotion of the finished film is also a part of the job. If a director is well known, his name and image is used to promote the film alongside the stars of the film. But having an image is not the primary function of a director, as they are judged by their creative talent and ability to run a production. It is second most powerful, quote, behind the scenes, unquote, profession in movie industry after the producer, but the director traditionally has complete control on the floor. All right, let's get down to a producer, film producer. Now, pretty much a film producer oversees and delivers a film project to the film studio or whatever financial entity they're dealing with, while preserving the integrity, voice, and vision of the film. They will also often take some financial risk by using their own money, especially during the pre-production process, before a film is fully financed, pretty much. So many film producers also obtain money in other ways in other fields. Directors, screenwriters, actors, they all kind of come together. But that's not always the case. Producers often actively involved throughout all major phases of the filmmaking process, from inception and development to completion and delivery of a film project. However, though, an idea or a concept for a film can originate from any individual, including a screenwriter, a director, or a producer. Now, a producer begins by obtaining the rights to create or co-create a full-length feature screenplay. The producer oversees the process, which includes coordinating, supervising, and controlling major aspects of the project. This includes fundraising and hiring key roles such as casting directors or film directors. They also influence the hiring of other personnel such as UPM or line producers and an accountant. Quote, from the first draft script through all stages of production, the final dub, success or failure, rests largely in the hands of the producer. Experience in this field does not come overnight. Rather, it is born out of long years of creative and technical know-how, and above all, a love for the job and all that goes with it, together with the ability to choose the right talent with which to surround himself. End quote. All right, let's get to editing. Editors. Let's start with editor's cut. There are pretty much several editing stages, and the editor's cut is the first. An editor's cut, sometimes referred to as the assembly edit or rough cut, is normally pretty much the first pass of what the final film will be when it reaches picture lock. The film editor usually starts working while principal photography starts, likely prior to cutting. The editor and director will have seen and discussed dailies, raw footage shot each day, pretty much. That's what dailies are, as shooting processes. Screening dailies gives the editor a pretty much ballpark idea of the director's intentions. Because it is the first pass, the editor's cut might be longer than the final film. The editor also continues to refine the cut while shooting continues, pretty much. And often the entire editing process goes on for many months, and sometimes more than a year, depending on the film. Now, let's get into director's cut. When shooting is finished, the director can then turn his full attention to collaborating with the editor and further refining the cut of the film. This is the time, pretty much, that is set aside where the film's editor's first cut is molded to fit the director's vision more. In the United States, under the DGA rules, directors receive a minimum of 10 weeks after completion of principal photography to prepare their first cut. Now, while collaborating on what is referred to as the quote-unquote director's cut, the director and the editor go over the entire movie with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, scenes shot are reordered, removed, shortened, and otherwise tweaked often. Often. It is discovered that there are plot holes, missing, you know, I mean, in this process, you can discover plot holes, missing shots, or even missing segments, which might require the new scene to be filmed, pretty much. because of this time working closely and collaborating, a period pretty much is normally far longer and far more intimately involved than the entire production and filming. Most directors and editors form a very unique and artistic bond. Now, Final Cut. Often after the director has had his chance to oversee a cut, the subsequent cuts are supervised by one or more producers who represent the production company and or movie studio. There have been several conflicts in the past between directors and the studios, sometimes leading to the use of the quote-unquote Alan Smithy credit, signifying when a director no longer wants to be associated with the final release. Now, that's continuity. Okay, well, continuity, I guess, obviously gets into editing. Now, continuity is a film term that suggests the series of shots that should be physically continuous, as if the camera simply changes angles in the course of a single event. For instance, if one shot of beer glass is empty, it should not be full in the next shot. Live coverage of sporting event would be an example of footage that is very continuous. Since live operators are cutting from one live feed to another, physical action pretty much of the shots matches very closely. Now, many people regard the inconsistencies in continuity as mistakes, and often the editors blamed in film. However, the continuity is very nearly last on the film editor's list of important things to maintain. Technically, continuity is the responsibility of the script supervisor and film director, who are together responsible for preserving the continuity and preventing errors from take to take, shot to shot. The script supervisor, who sits next to the director during the shooting, keeps the physical continuity, the edit in mind, as the shots pretty much are set up. He is the editor, or he or she is the editor's watchman or woman. If shots are taken out of sequence, as is often the case, he will be alert to make sure that the beer glass in the appropriate state is, matches. The editor utilizes the script supervisor's notes during post-production to log and keep track of vast amounts of footage and takes that directors might shoot. So pretty much continuity, you don't want, if you're shooting a film, say there's, or a music video, there's one shot that you have to keep redoing. So you have to make sure that the person's hair looks exactly the same from this scene to that scene. As mentioned before, the beer glass, if it was full in this scene, it should make sense that if we cut to another angle, the glass should be the exact same fill length. Sometimes, in a lot of movies, the continuity breaks. Sometimes you'll see, in one shot, one holding a glass, and then all of a sudden it cuts to a different angle and they're holding like a paper cup. So that's a sign of a major continuity flaw. So be on the lookout for that. All right, so let's get to the DI, or digital intermediate DI colorist. It's a motion picture finishing process, which classically involves digitizing a motion picture and manipulating the color and or image characteristics. If often replaces or arguments, the photochemical timing process is usually the final creative adjustment to move before distribution in theaters. I mean, it's pretty much distinguished from telecine process, in which the film is scanned and colors manipulated early in the process to facilitate editing. Now, however, the lines between telecine and DI are continually blurred and often executed on the same hardware by colorists of the same background. Now, these two steps are typically part of the overall color management process in a motion picture at different points in time. Digital intermediate is also customarily done at a higher resolution with greater color fidelity than telecine transfers. Now, although originally used to describe the process that started film scanning and ended with film recording, digital intermediate is also used to describe color grading and final mastering. I mean, even when a digital camera is used as an image source or when the final movie is not output to film. This is due to recent advances in, obviously, digital cinematography and digital projection technologies that pretty much strive to match film orientation and film projection. So in traditional photochemical film finishing, an intermediate is produced by exposing film to the original camera negative. Now, the intermediate is then used to mass produce the film that gets distributed to theaters. So color grading is done by varying the amount of red, green, and blue light used to expose the intermediate. This seeks to be able to replace or augment a photochemical approach to creating this intermediate. Now, the digital intermediate process uses digital tools to color grade, which allows for a much finer control of individual colors and areas of the image that allows for adjustments of an image structure, grain, sharpness, etc. The intermediate for film reproduction can then be pretty much produced by means of a film recorder. The physical intermediate film that is a result of recording process is sometimes also called a digital intermediate, and usually recorded internegative, I guess, IN stock, which inherently finer grain than camera negative, OCN. One of the key technical achievements that makes the DI possible is a LUT, or lookup table, which can be made to mimic how the digital image will look once it's printed on normal release print stock. The DI's facilitates generally also comparing the digital image directly to a print on the same screen, It pretty much ensuring the precise calibration of the process. And the digital master created during the digital intermediate process can be recorded to very stable yellow, cyan, and, you know, secondaries, yellow, cyan, and magenta. Separations on black and white film and an expected 100-year or longer life. So, yeah. The digital master is often used as a source for digital cinema, DCI, Digital Cinema Innovatives, compliant distribution of the motion picture for digital projection. So essentially, we're talking about, I would probably just, you know, since we're talking about digital colorist. So if you're color grading, you're heavily involved. I mean, you're probably one of the last people that's going to probably have his hands, or he or she are going to have their hands on the final image. They pretty much use things like DaVinci Resolve is a color grading software, and they use this panel to control the hue, the chroma, the primary, secondaries, power windows, to isolate certain colors and pretty much form the look of the film, whether it be a heavy contrast or very desaturated look, or a scene could call for a distorted high contrast color, or even black and white. You have to make sure there's no set black and white. I mean, you can use red, green, and blue to manipulate a black and white image. You know, so essentially, DI colorist is what it technically is. You help by color grading a film, and usually, the best way to record a movie, even if you're using a DSLR or anything, is to use the flattest picture profile, which could be anything from Technicolor cine style for a DSLR, or Red cameras use a setting called Red Log Film. And Blackmagic uses a film log-like a flat image, which pretty much looks very desaturated, but it's meant for post-production to be colored to give you the most dynamic range when coloring. So playing with the highlights and middle parts and shadows, and gives you all that latitude to push colors and whatnot, so the image doesn't fall apart, which, well, you know, depending on what you're using, whether it be RAW or AVC HD codec or VCI or MPEG-4, MPEG-2, any kind of codec, depending. So always shoot flat, and your color corrector or DI colorist will be very happy, because they will have that much more room to manipulate the image as you see fit. All right, so let's get down to sound designer, or sound designing work. Now, the sound designer and composers begin their work by studying the script, gathering as much information as they can about the script and any sound or music that it might call for. As in all other aspects, pretty much the design is early on in the meeting with the director and the design team is really essential to get a clear understanding of the production concept. Some directors will already have very clear ideas about what the sound effect or music should sound like. Well, others may request that the sound designer or composers sit in on rehearsals to pretty much assist developing effects, music, to fit the specific context in which they will be used. You know, once they have a precise sense of the production needs out of the music or sound, the composer begins composing the necessary musical pieces, and the sound designer begins to gather and create necessary sounds. So sounds and musics in theater can motivate actions on stage and indicate events taking place off stage, establish the time of day, season, weather, locate action in a specific place, create mood and changes in mood, simulate an audience's expectations of what it is to come, provide information about the characters, build transitions between scenes, offer shortcuts, rapidly advance the plot, or recall past events. You know, they can control pitch, volume, quality, sound, direction, duration, etc., etc. For more information on sound design, I will send you to this link. So it'll be titled Sound Design. So each link will have a description before the link, so you know exactly what you're clicking on. Calibration. Very, very important. When editing, filming, what have you, you should always have a monitor, an EVF, whatever device that you're using to view the content that you are recording, or the content that you're editing, or the content that you're coloring. Calibration is key. So make sure that you take the necessary steps that, as much as possible, get your monitors to all adhere to the same, because there is a standard in Hollywood for color. There is a standard for color. And color is usually based in this XYZ coordinate of Rec 709 color space. It's made up of red, green, and blue, which are your primaries, and secondaries are, you know, cyan, magenta. Anyway, but, you know, just SpectraCal has CalMan software to calibrate televisions. They have meters and software from down to the enthusiast down to a true professional. The ISF, the Image in Science Foundation has courses that you can take to become certified, or you can go through and become a THX certified calibrator. Or you can hire these people by looking for your local ISF or THX certified calibrator. Now, you don't necessarily have to be certified to calibrate. If you are an enthusiast, you can get the Calman SpectraCal software and a package and dabble into calibrating yourself. Some TVs, most TVs now have 10-point white balance get your TV looking right. You know, your reds, your blues, your luminance, your chroma, your saturation, your hue. All these things are important because if you're coloring or capturing on a device and it looks different from your monitor and your computer, and then it looks different on the secondary monitor, and then it looks different on the plasma you're using or the LCD that you're using to view the final cut, it shouldn't have that many color shifts. So make sure calibration is key. So I'll post a couple links to calibration softwares and where you can find local calibrators in your area to come calibrate your television, whether you just want to watch things at reference level. So there is a reference level of a color gamut. And within that color gamut is what a director and colorist spent a lot of time doing to, there's a lot of work that is done, and a lot of people destroy that work by watching things with dynamic presets or really fucked up presets, and all that hard work is destroyed, all that dynamic range and whatnot. So make sure that you calibrate all your monitors and make sure that they adhere to the color gamut that you should be at, the reference state, and work in that color space, and make sure that everything's uniformed, and you'll have better results. And bias light. Make sure if you're working in the dark, which when you color, you probably should be working in the dark, bias light could help, which is a 6,500 degree Kelvin backlight on your monitors to help separate the background from less eye strain, better perceived detail. So essentially just better eye strain, less eye strain. And remember, all your monitors should be at a D65, which is the not color temperature. It's 6,500 degree Kelvin, which is like a daylight light bulb to help facilitate. That's what they usually use in Hollywood. All the monitors and projection screens have a D65, 6,500K color temperature. So always remember that, and your gamma point should be anywhere between 2.2 or 2.4. The 180 degree rule. I will refer to you to this link. It's a YouTube link. I'll find the best one, but essentially the 180 degree rule it usually separates the whether you can tell someone is amateurish or not. If you don't want your videos to look amateurish, the 180 degree rule is essentially if you're doing a over the shoulder, say the camera is on one side of the actors. So say the actors are on the camera's facing forward. Okay. So imagine this, the camera's facing forward, and your actors are face-to-face, so you're over the shoulder of the first actor looking ahead to the other actor, so you put the camera straight forward. Now, you can pick your orientation from there. Now, if you move to the left, you have to stay on the left side of that line. Now, imagine there's an imaginary line. Or you can stay on the right side of that line. Now, once you decide where your camera is going to move, what line you've chosen, whether it's the right or the left, you have to stay on that line until you reorient the audience by a dissolve, a transition, or in camera rotation, reorientation. So if it's kind of hard to understand, that's what I'm going to kind of link you to this. So what essentially is that once you choose that, like say the right side, you have to make sure that you're filming your coverage from anywhere on the right side, from low angles to one. But if you cut from the right side all of a sudden to the left side and the left side to the right, it could be very disorienting for audiences. Now, it's a rule, and it could be broken. It's not law, but you can use it for disorientation effects, such as a Dutch angle. So you know, remember that usually you don't want to cross that line, because it will disorient your audience, and it will automatically ring, especially if you have a lot of it. It'll ring amateurs to a lot of people. So try and make sure that if you're going to change angles, you either do it through a transition or pan the camera around continuously and reorientate your audience so they know. So essentially, you know, you set up your master shot and you want to kind of, now you want to go around the actors and shoot from this side. Okay, well, you can do that. You can do it slowly by, you know, reorienting the camera, and the audience is kind of gets a sense of space and where they're at. So, but for further explanation, go ahead and go to this link here. Another tip, sound is very important. Stuff will look very, very amateurish if you don't have good sound and audio design. So work your best at trying to capture that audio, whether it's an interview or whatnot. You might have to do some ADR, which is additional dialogue. ADR essentially is, say you were out, you recorded something, there was a lot of ambient noise, your actors, you boom mic them, and you just couldn't get that clean dialogue, so you couldn't get it. So what you have them do is you have them come into a controlled setting and you loop that specific scene, and you have them try to match what they were conveying on that day. So usually a lot of people don't like to do that, because sometimes it's hard to bring that energy back that you had that performance. But if you have to, make sure that you do some ADR if necessary. Audio is very important. Make sure you use music. And like I said, if you can, find a great sound designer, but if not, try and keep an eye on those levels and make sure that the sound is consistently from, if you're doing interviews or whatever, sound is very important to sell yourself as more professional. Lenses. Photography is very important, whether you're being a photojournalist to a documentary filmmaker, ENG, a film director, whatever. Learn your lenses. Glass is important. F-stops, aperture, you know, which are apertures, shutter speeds. Learn the basics. So learn your camera. You don't have to necessarily paint with an expensive camera, but if you find yourself that your vision requires a sense of high quality, such as a RED camera, check out rental houses like Redefined Rentals. And you don't always have to own a camera to shoot stuff. Remember to put money into your production and rent cameras for a cheap cost at rental houses. And I'll have a couple of links to a couple of rental houses. But if you're looking to shoot anything with 4K and RED and the DSLRs like the Mark III, check out Redefined Rentals. They got really good prices for weekend shoots and whatnot. And you'll find that, hey, you know, I need to spend $14,000, $15,000 on a camera. I got to shoot on a $15,000 camera for $600 for 3 days. And the value of that was priceless. Not only did I get to learn the camera, but to shoot with a truly cinematic camera is quite an experience. So check them out, or check out rental houses. Rent lenses, but know your equipment. Make sure you build over time. Won't all happen at once, but try and get jibs, dollies, good tripods, anything to add production value. Lighting is very important, so stock up on lights. Find as many good deals on equipment as possible. And try not to blow all your wad on your camera. Rent. I would blow more money into production, such as editing suites, such as Final Cut Pro 10, Adobe Premiere CS6, compositing software, such as Photoshop or Motion or After Effects. So know your work and try and put your money into production rather than into the camera. The camera is only a tool, but you will need many other tools to get production value. So renting is a viable option, my friends. So now I'm going to name off a couple of movie titles that help me learn a lot about filmmaking, because it has a lot of extra content. Now, all these titles that I will name off are Blu-rays. So make sure you pick up the Blu-rays. I have no idea. I haven't seen a DVD in a long time. So my favorite director is David Fincher. So he loves to do a lot of supplemental material in his movies. So number one, Social Network. If you can pick that up, watch it. Watch it with the audio commentary with David Fincher. Watch it again with the commentary of the cast and crew. Watch the beginning, middle, and end production. I mean, he goes through the whole process of making the Social Network, and that does help a lot when you get directors that like to share the filmmaking process. And then watching these things, you learn a lot on how things should run or how a particular person directs. And it's priceless. Sometimes people don't realize when they're buying these movies that there's a lot of education in these things. You know, they just kind of chuck the bonus features out, or nobody listens to the commentaries. But there's gold in those things. So Social Network, Benjamin Button, Zodiac. Ooh, Zodiac. So pretty much anything from David Fincher, Fight Club. So second, Star Trek, the new Star Trek. From J.J. Abrams. So J.J. Abrams is a really good director. Check him out. But I found Star Trek to be a very good Blu-ray, well executed. Lots of lens flares. He is a really he's got an interesting eye, J.J. Abrams. So the Star Trek supplementals are exquisite. They have from A to B how they made the movie. Up to gag reels, a full-length, feature-length commentary track. So watch that with J.J. Abrams talking, and you'll be very happy with that Blu-ray purchase of the new Star Trek. Also, the Dark Knight Rises movie, Christopher Nolan. Whether you liked it or not, pretty much all the Dark Knight movies, but I found the Dark Knight Rises has the most supplemental material that I found very helpful. So check the Dark Knight Rises Blu-ray trailer, movie out. Can't say enough about Stanley Kubrick, so rent anything from, or buy anything from Kubrick. From The Shining to Eyes Wide Shut to anything from Kubrick, you'll learn a lot. Hitchcock, I could also say. It's kind of cliche, I know, that I'm starting to name off, but you know, watch over and over some Hitchcock movies, and there's certain film law, you know, that you should adhere to. And, you know, and then there's other stuff that are rules that are meant to be broken. So don't worry about that. So Avatar. If you have a chance to buy the non-3D version, it was a full like special feature thing. James Cameron is a good director. He's directed big time movies, but Avatar has a lot of good supplemental material if you buy the collector's edition, I think it is. And it has, like I said, from point A to point B, how he made that movie, and that's very, very useful. very useful stuff, as well as the new Titanic 3D Blu-ray limited edition that came out. It has everything from the conception to the final word on Titanic. So check out James Cameron's Titanic on Blu-ray. It has all the special features that you could ever want. Now, Zack Snyder also has watch 300. If you do buy the Blu-ray 300, make sure it's the white complete experience. It's a white kind of case, and it's called a complete experience. It has more in-depth special features and whatnot. Zack Snyder is also a person that loves to do supplemental material and talk you through exactly what the production process was. So check him out. 300 is one of the movies that I got a lot out of. So that's really, really good. As for Christopher Nolan, one of the movies that I think, fucked with my head the most is Memento. So if you get a chance, buy Memento. And that's a movie told kind of if there was ever a movie that was not, aside from Tarantino's Pulp Fiction or kind of any Tarantino also kind of adheres to it, but Memento is one of those movies where, I mean, the shit is non-linear. So there is, everything's, the movie almost told backwards pretty much, in different perspectives. And it really gets you thinking, man. So check out Memento. You'll learn a lot. So directors to pay attention to that I pay a lot of attention to, because you'll find that you will more or less find a connection to a specific director. But the directors that I find the most connections to, because it's the style I kind of like to gear towards, is Fincher. David Fincher, just, I don't know, just I love what he does. Nolan, I love Nolan. Abrams, J.J. Abrams is good, and Zack Snyder. So those are some of the directors that I kind of really, Scorsese. I like Scorsese stuff, I gotta say. I like it a lot. Those are James Cameron, obviously. A little ballsy. He's ballsy. He's got a rep of being ballsy. Those pretty much are The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Check out The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That movie also is just cinematic beauty at its best, if you like those kind of movies. So don't forget comedies, man. They're good comedies. Some of my favorite comedies include the Hangover, Step Brothers, 21 Jump Street, not the show, but the newest movie that came out. License to Drive. Ooh, I love that movie. Classic. The Corys. The Girl Next Door. I really like that movie a lot. I learned a lot from it in terms of shooting style. A lot of people might not get the kind of dark comedy or the Ben Stiller kind of comedy, but if you get a chance, check out Tropic Thunder. It's really, really, really funny, and it's got this edge to it, this weird comedic approach to it. I can't describe it. It's just trippy. Some of my other favorites is Stir Crazy. The Big Lebowski, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Back to School, definitely learned a lot from that. Love that movie, and Can't Hardly Wait. and Trading Places. So those are just a rundown of some of the movies, some of the comedy movies that I like. Other movies that I learned a lot from, The Rules of Attraction. Check that movie out. It is badass. I also enjoyed Gattaca a lot. The Thomas Crown Affair, the newest version. Awakenings was very, very good. Believe it or not, Deja Vu. I don't know if you're a Denzel Washington fan, but, you know, Deja Vu is really, really trippy and good if you like kind of time travel stuff. And I got to say, No Country for Old Men got me from beginning to end. I like that movie a lot. Prometheus, definitely. If you're a Ridley Scott fan, you'll learn a lot from that guy. And I guess, you know, I could keep naming stuff off, but I guess we'll stop there. So yeah, so those are the movies and certain things that I've learned from. Okay, so we've kind of covered some of the basics, and not to bore you any further, here come my opinions and ideas of what filmmaking should be, what my philosophy is in terms of creation, filmmaking, music, art, whatever you're doing. What I tend to do is, as a filmmaker, you know, out of necessity, whether you're bootstrapping it, you know, and trying to build a company from the ground up as we are, you're gonna have to do a lot of free work, not only to get experience, but to street cred is very necessary too. You know, you can't just strap on a fucking, you know, a director's viewfinder on your neck and a hat says director, and sit in the director's chair and say, "Hey, work, come to me. I'm worth this much." No. A lot of times what will happen is you will get to a point where you may achieve success or fail. But this depends greatly on how different is your work compared to someone else's, how good you are at your craft. And this could apply to music or painting or writing or directing, anything. So if you're a director, an editor, a colorist, whatever, if you want to make it in this business, you got to be the smartest person in the fucking room when it comes to your position. So gather as much information as you can about what you want to do. Get out there and do it. The best advice and the best tool that you can use is called the fuck-up tool. Now, the reason I call it the fuck-up tool is because the best thing you could do in the business is fuck up. Because what happens when you fuck up, you learn from that mistake. And by learning by your mistakes makes you not only stronger, but directs you into a direction of like, okay, this didn't work. I should have gone this way. Now, next time, I'm going to make sure I don't do that. So the fuck up, never feel bad about it. I mean, you can feel bad about it, but use it as a tool and learn from it. Also, one of my philosophies on filmmaking is, a lot of people say shoot, 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 you know, just get out there and shoot anything, put out anything. I feel that for me, that compromises my integrity as a filmmaker, as a director, or a filmmaker, I guess you can say. Because if I shoot anything and everything that comes to my head, there's going to be a lot of crap, and a lot of people don't have the patience to filter through the crap, and then they'll associate you with some things will be good, some things will be bad, but you'll get kind of lost and not only lose your direction. I feel that art has to come when it comes. If you're going to be a director, stick with it. If you're going to be in the filmmaking industry, don't be discouraged. You could be in this business for 10 years and not see results, but if you love it, make sure you eat, sleep, and breathe this shit. And you will find a form of success if just make sure you keep your integrity intact. If you feel like you are something is beneath you, it doesn't mean it's beneath someone else, or it doesn't mean that you're saying, oh, well, what you do is shit and I'm not going to do that. You know, you shouldn't shit on other people that, like, say, you know, you're a strictly narrative director and you have a friend that is strictly an event shooter, whether it be weddings, conventions, whatnot. Their work is just as valid as yours. Now, never compromise yourself. And if you don't want to shoot an event because you don't feel comfortable doing that, or you don't want to go that route, I say there is a point where you do need to do work to gain a better perspective of the industry. So I would say try and dabble in different things, but stick to your original integrity of what you want to do. If you don't want to shoot events, don't shoot events, and don't be pressured to shoot things that you don't want to shoot. And if you're trying to come up with a film or a music video or anything, and you feel like you're forcing it too much, back off a little bit, step back, see what's wrong with the picture. Shouldn't have to be a fight to get there. It should kind of come, and you should be very ambitious in what you're doing. There should be drive behind your work. If you find yourself losing that drive, then I would suggest stepping back and seeing what's wrong with the picture. But an event shooter, a film director for narratives, a music video director, a person that just decides to shoot comedy shorts or educational videos are all valid. Surround yourself with very talented people. At first, you might have to do a lot of wearing the hats yourself, like we do. Out of necessity, I edit. Out of necessity, we color. Me, my wife, my daughter. Out of necessity, we do a lot of the cinematography and sound design, because we haven't networked enough or know enough people. But once you do, it's you should dabble in a little bit of editing and a little bit of coloring to get an idea of what you're looking for in that facet. So once you find that particular person, whether it's an editor, cinematographer, a colorist, a producer, and they, you know, it's like, okay, these guys are good at what they do. Learn to delegate responsibility. If you strictly want to be a director, just learn to let go a little bit and let them be as good as their job as you are as yours. You know, try not to micromanage too many things. As a director, I know that's kind of hard because it kind of contradicts what I said before. But at the end of the day, you have to let go a little bit to get a little bit. So, you know, it's a back and forth. You'll find your pace. But if you're in the filmmaking business, just make sure that you stick with it. And art is subjective. It doesn't have to be linear. It doesn't have to have a beginning, middle, and end if you don't want it to. You can cross the line. You can do many different things. I say push yourself, challenge yourself, take yourself sometimes out of your comfort zone, try new things, and post them out there to be criticized. Try not to take the criticism too harshly. Some people will give you proper criticism. Other people will just fucking hate on you. So try and filter out that crap, develop a thick skin, and you should be good. Now, my last piece of advice is, don't ever let anybody discourage you. If you want to be a director and that's what you want to be that. If you want to be a musician, be that. Take the bitter with the better, the sweet and the sour. You might be good at what you do, you might not, but you'll find your place in the industry. And sometimes you might be shooting for one star and find that you were meant for another star. So always also be open to suggestion, because you might suck at directing, but say you're really good on being a DP. or an editor or a colorist. So your journey can take you anywhere. So keep your eyes open and make sure that, you know, what you're doing makes you happy. And if you ever find, like I said, that you're losing your passion or you're fighting to create something too hard and it's not coming naturally, step back, you know, with your core group of production team and find out what the problem is. And with editing, make sure that you look at it more than once. Try not to rush too many things. There will be deadlines in this business that you will have to adhere to, but until that time where you're getting paid and you have to hit deadlines, try and make your own deadlines, but also take that time to learn. If you have to take hours learning while you're not getting paid to do something, do it. We do music video tributes that are nonprofit to learn how to shoot and cut a music video. That's what we like to do. And other stuff. So shoot stuff, even if it's lip singing to someone else's song. If you have a concept for a music video, try and copy other people's work from frame to frame. That will help you also learn to light, to compose, to edit. So, you know, the information is out there and don't give up. So hopefully you guys found this helpful. This has been Impulse Kitty Productions. Go ahead and subscribe to us on our Facebook page. Like us on our Facebook page. Subscribe to us on YouTube, on Vimeo. Follow us on Twitter. And we will be launching an official IKP website soon, Impulse Kitty Productions website soon. So keep on the lookout for that. And also, we will be doing a music video tribute soon. So keep an eye out for that. Thanks a lot for listening to my nonsensical ramblings. hopefully some of this made sense. My goal here was to educate you. And hopefully you found this informative and not too boring. So take this information that you could either take it or you can go read it for yourself. And but my goal was to make it a little bit easier for you to just kind of pop a pair of headphones on and just kick back, listen to it, and see if you get anything from it. So this has been IKP's film tour 101. hopefully you found this interesting and entertaining. Thanks for stopping by, and don't forget to subscribe to us. I will be providing all the links below to our websites. We also do a podcast called Digital Film on iTunes and Podomatic. So go ahead and subscribe to us and rate us on iTunes if you can. And we try and do podcasts at least once a week. We talk about anything and everything in the digital film world. So just make sure to hit that like button on Facebook, follow us on Vimeo and YouTube, and thank you for stopping by. This has been Ruben Ortega here at IKP.